I'm already enough and it's already fine. And I've already done all I need to do. And if I die tomorrow, I've lived a practical, successful life. And so if I can free myself of that, and I think if we can all free ourselves of that kind of I'm not enough thing, we then can find that purpose is way more abundant and less scarce than we think.
Welcome to the podcast where we learn about life, finances, and how to live just a little outside the norm. What does purpose mean to you? When I hear the word purpose, I know we get caught up in this idea that we need a grand purpose in life, like to be a doctor or an astronaut or a lawyer. But is that what purpose really is? Do people walk away from those careers thinking, yes, I have fulfilled my life's dream? I don't know if that's the case. Sometimes purpose can be collecting baseball cards and trading them with friends, or purpose can be spending time with your family, playing with your kids on a trampoline in the backyard, or creating community, like me. Purpose means so much to so many people, and a lot of us lack it. We spend our time chasing what Jordan will call big P, large goals, but not actually doing small P, which are purpose-driven activities, things we might have loved in our childhood that we've forgotten as we've gotten older. If you think you might need a little more purpose in your life, today's episode will be perfect for you. We'll have actual practical ways that you can start finding your purpose and living a much more meaningful life. Listen in. But first, a quick word from our sponsor.
Want to join a community of folks who talk openly about their finances? Join Tuesday FinTalks. We meet weekly to discuss a new financial topic and get expert education from guest speakers. Get recordings, discounts to FI events, and more with your monthly subscription. Sign up today at amberlygrant.com/FinTalks. Together, we succeed.
Jordan, your history as a doctor would seem extremely successful to most people. It's something that in our society we thrive for. We want to be a doctor, a lawyer, an astronaut, an entrepreneur that makes 10 figures. But that doesn't bring something even more important to our life. Can you tell us a little bit about what was lacking for you and how you found it?
Certainly. So my father died when I was 7 years old and he was a doctor. And I think because I looked at the world through the lens of a 7 year old, I somehow thought I was responsible. So the easiest thing to do was to decide I'm going to walk in his footsteps. If I could co-opt his sense of purpose and identity, all of a sudden I could fill the space that he left and the world would be good and I'd no longer be responsible and everything would be great. And that actually served me. It wasn't necessarily the most mature coping mechanism, but it totally served me. It drove me through high school and college and studying and medical school. But something happened when I started practicing medicine. I realized that the joy I thought I was going to have never came. And instead, I got all the burnout and the dreading going to work and the anxiety on Sunday nights. And it's not that I didn't like parts of being a doctor, but I realized that I had co-opted my father's version of purpose and identity, and they were no longer serving me. And so I did what most people do at that point. I started looking for a mad dash out. I didn't start looking for a better sense of purpose or identity. What I figured is my problem is my job. It's no longer fulfilling me. I need to leave my job. And that's when I discovered financial independence, and it became money. Money is the answer. If I can just become financially independent, if I just have enough money, I can get out of the situation that doesn't fit me and I'll be happily ever after. And of course, then I got there and realized that yes, it took care of my basic money problems, but it didn't give me a sense of purpose nor identity to take the place of what I was lacking. And so that was really my struggle, especially when I realized I was financially independent, is I had spent my whole life building a sense of purpose and identity that were really someone else's and that maybe served me in the short term, but wasn't serving me in the long term.
I think a lot of people can connect with that, whether that identity comes from their parents or the community or some sort of social pressure that they felt when they were young or in their teen years. That is something that so many people can relate to. I myself cannot relate to that. It's really odd. Growing up, my family was very detached, like emotionally from each other. And my parents are Scientologists. So our sense of identity actually wasn't as a family unit, but as individuals within a family. So my family very much believed like you raise a productive member of society and then you're done. So for me, a lot of people call their parents when they're in their 20s or late teens and they call them every day when they're in college. And I just never had that connection to my family. So when I left home to move to Los Angeles, not to go to university, but just to get away, I had no one who had any like idea of what I should be. And I left it all behind. And so I had this opportunity to almost have a blank slate. And that to me was like the start of my journey of purpose, which was very rocky and difficult. But I can really understand that taking on someone's identity and then applying it to your own life and then looking back maybe 20 years and saying, whoa, that actually isn't me.
There's no shortage of people telling you who you should be as a kid. So Originally, when we're little children, often we go and we play and we know what lights us up. And every little kid can tell you what they love doing and they'll naturally go towards that. But something happens when we get a little older, and it can be many different things. For me, it was the death of my father. But for a lot of people, it's just this idea of once they get to a certain age, it's okay, now you have to be serious and think about what you're going to do for a living. And all of a sudden, we start thinking about those major categories that society tells us we're supposed to fulfill, whether that's doctor, lawyer, firefighter, or major league baseball player. They're all out there. But nowadays, we also have social media and marketing and advertising, and they're all sending us these messages of what purpose is supposed to look like. So when you go on Instagram and see the influencer who's traveling around the world and making videos of all these exotic countries, it's very natural for you to say, I don't know what my sense of purpose is, but boy, doesn't that look exciting. Maybe that should be my purpose. And so we co-opt other people's sense of purpose. And the problem is most of the people trying to sell this to us are trying to either make money or get some advantage for themselves. Yeah. So there's no lack of forces trying to get us to be things that might not be innately appealing. And one part that's really similar in all these situations is usually the thing that they're trying to get us to become is really big and audacious and important. It's all about changing the world or having the most or being a billionaire. It's always a very outsized version of purpose, which is really difficult because most people will not get six-pack abs. Maybe they don't have the will. Maybe they don't have the time. Maybe they don't have the genetics. Yeah. Most people won't really travel the world and go to all these exotic places all the time. Most people won't be influencers. And so these big, audacious versions of purpose that are being sold to us are setting us up for disappointment, failure, and anxiety because we don't really have the agency to accomplish most of these things. Only the very few do. And so that leaves the rest of us in a rut. And if you ask yourself, well, why does purpose cause people anxiety? And we know it does. Studies show that 91% of people get purpose anxiety at some point in their life. Yep. Why does purpose cause people anxiety? Because they're being told that their purpose is supposed to be this huge thing that often they don't have agency to achieve. And that feels bad.
And what do you call that big purpose?
So in my book, The Purpose Code, which comes out in January, and in a lot of the content I produce, I call it Big P Purpose. This is that big type of purpose. It's usually goal-oriented. It's not process-oriented. We're not talking about enjoying the things you do. We're talking about working really hard to get to an end point. And it's very scarcity mindset-oriented. Only a certain number of people can get six-pack abs. Only a certain number of people can be Major League Baseball players. So for those very scarce few, there's success. For everyone else, there's failure. Big P purpose is very failable. It's like easy not to succeed. And so I think it often leads people to anxiety as opposed to what I think is a much more healthy version of purpose, which I call little P purpose.
Okay. If you had to think back, what would be something that was your big P purpose that you never achieved but caused you anxiety?
Oh, I think I had huge goals. I wanted to be a New York Times bestseller, first and foremost. I'm like, I want to be a New York Times bestseller. I want to write a book, and I want that book to get out to millions of people.
Yeah.
It sounds like a great goal in the beginning, and it sounds really exciting. But then again, you start realizing there's tons of great authors who never even get close to that. They're award-winning authors who sell only 1,000 books. Yes, that's a goal and it sounds exciting, but the truth of the matter is it's very scarcity mindset oriented. The likelihood I'm going to achieve that is small and I only have a certain amount of agency, right? I'm not an Instagram influencer with a 5 million person following, which is what you need nowadays to be a New York Times bestseller.
Yeah.
So you start thinking about that could be my sense of purpose, but I'm probably going to end up upset and unhappy about it and feeling like I'm not enough. What if I flipped it around and said, you know what? I love writing. And writing excites me. And when I sit down and I plan a book and I start writing, I get in this flow state where I'm enjoying myself and I get to the end of it and I feel like I really accomplished something. Maybe that's what makes me more happy. And I can look for incremental gain. I can say I could become a better writer. I could take courses to learn how to write better. I could talk to more editors. I could even hire people to help me. All of those are incremental gains that I have much more agency over. Mm-hmm. But being able to be a New York Times bestseller or not, there are a lot of things. You got to be the right person at the right time, saying the right things with a lot of luck. And a lot of times we might have two or three of those things in that formula, but not everything. So I think being a famous writer was one of those big P purpose things that I realized probably no longer suited me. Having a huge medical practice where I made tons of money and no patient ever had a bad outcome and I was perfect. And all of those things were these kind of big, audacious goals. And I found that reality didn't fit. Like being a doctor isn't always fun. It's not always running in, saving the day. A lot of times it's paperwork. It's unclear diagnoses. It's the difficult day-to-day drudge of dealing with health problems. And it didn't match that idea of what society told me I was supposed to be, what all of the movies tell you doctors are supposed to look like, et cetera.
I can understand that when you're saying, I'm going to write a book. I think some of our role models are New York Times bestsellers, right? That's what we're seeing. We're not seeing that person who sold hundreds, thousands, millions of people who wrote that book and sold 5 to friends. They sold 1,000 to their small following. Because we don't see them. They aren't on the New York Times bestseller list. Like, we should have a list of best book that sold the least.
So yeah. Here's the kicker. If you write a New York Times bestselling book, I guarantee the amount of stress and pressure when you go to write that second book is actually going to be multiplied. I can't remember which Netflix special I was watching, but I was watching it about a college football coach, and his dream among dreams was whatever, to win the national championship or the Orange Bowl or whatever it is. I don't know enough about football.
Yeah.
But it's funny because it was such his dream and he won it his first year at a new college, but his life went progressively downhill after that because the pressure to do it again and to top himself. And what that is that's loss aversion. So even if we reach that big audacious goal, we become petrified that we're going to lose it or not be as relevant anymore. So even meeting those big goals doesn't necessarily make us feel good, which is, I think, something we notice also in financial independence. A lot of people make their big audacious goal financial independence, which is actually highly achievable. So it's not like a lot of these big goals people pick, but they find that once they get there, that it actually wasn't what truly gratified them. And they find themselves feeling disconnected and lost as opposed to that nirvana state they think they're going to hit once they get there.
Yep. That I see all the time. Being really involved in the financial independence space and running my own community of FinTalks, 1/3 of FinTalk members are financially independent. And every single one of them talked about their journey of a goal, not a purpose, of achieving their goal of financial independence, whatever that might be, scarcity mindset coming in, being afraid, one more year syndrome, having nothing to retire to. It's almost like the story of you being a doctor. You decided you needed to stop being a doctor, essentially. This was the problem in your life. But that's not necessarily the case, right? You don't need to run away from something. You need to run towards something. And I think that saying is really important because when you're running towards something, it means that you've taken years to figure out what that thing is, to start doing it and incorporating it into your life so that when other parts of your life start to go away, that thing maybe takes more space or evolves into something newer, different, greater. I love that because I feel like I was really lucky in my younger years to find sense of purpose in different places. I consider life as chapters. So every piece of my life has had a certain chapter. And when I look back, I might not notice I'm in a new chapter or that they're transitioning, except for there may be some uncomfortability and things going on. Sometimes it's very apparent. There's a breakup that happens and the new chapter starts as a single person. What I've noticed is that in each chapter of my life, I've felt a sense of contentment. There's been two running lines with me. So things that are just constantly with me. And that is one, building community. No matter where I am, which country I'm in, doesn't matter. I'm in Australia. I've built a community somehow. I'm going to lunch with friends or joined a climbing community. I'm either joining community or creating it myself. And that has been since I was a child. My mom tells a story. When I was 7 years old, I would go around to all the neighbors because we had a very kid-heavy neighborhood. And I would get 25 cents from all the parents. I would walk all the kids to McDonald's and we would go get a McDonald's ice cream cone. And I'd pay for all the ice cream cones. The kids would play in the play place. I would sit there and hang out on those spinny chairs that McDonald's had, if you remember those, like having my ice cream cone. And then I'd walk the kids back. And this is since I was 7 years old. And just building community has been this line with me. And the other one is saying yes, that I want to talk about your spaghetti theory in a second, because to me, that's been something that I've really done in my life, which is just try new things, say yes. There's a movie called Yes Man that just really resonated with me. I got to live my life much more like Jim Carrey in Yes Man and just try new things. Those things have carried me through to look back and be like, wow, I lived life to the fullest and it felt good.
Believe it or not, I think you go in the opposite direction most people go. So what I've found is generally people suffer from traumas and stress and generational issues that make them feel not enough. It's really an enough problem. And so they decide that I'm going to feel enough if I just do this big audacious thing, whether it's financial independence, whether it's this big audacious purpose, whatever it is. If I can achieve that thing or if I can make enough money, I can fill this hole of enough and I'm going to feel good. The problem is then they either get there and succeed and realize that they still don't feel enough.
Yeah.
Or they don't get there and they fail and it just makes them feel all over again like they're not enough. I think the problem that people really face is enough has nothing to do with purpose and it has nothing to do with the present and future. If you really want to answer the enough question, it's about your past. It's about dealing with your generational trauma and the trauma of your childhood and coming to terms with the fact that you were always enough and you're already enough and you are more the hero of your past than the victim. And if you can get there, then it's really easy to walk into purpose because purpose is about your present and your future. And if you feel like enough, all of a sudden you don't need your purpose to fulfill a sense of enough. You don't have to go towards purpose to make yourself feel like you're a good person because you already feel like a good person. And once you're there, then purpose becomes really abundant. The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is once you start pursuing purpose, it naturally builds a community around you. And I think community is actually what makes people really light up and be happy. Okay. You're interesting because you went backwards and you just started building community right away. But a lot of people have to go that stage of understanding their past and feeling enough, then building a life of purpose around something that's deeply important to them. And that leads to community and connections, which makes them happy.
That makes a lot of sense where a lot of people will, they'll pursue the goal. And the goal can be a lonely road. Every goal is different. So I don't want to just categorize goal setting or that kind of thing. It can be lonely. Financial independence is a very independent goal. You're not playing soccer with a bunch of people and scoring goals. You're literally on a spreadsheet saving as much as you can. And it might actually be an antithesis to building community because you don't want to spend the money to be with friends, to go to a cruise with FinTalkers. That might be something that you block yourself off of. And then again, you get to the end of the goal and you're like, oh man, I've got nothing here. No friends, no family, no nothing. I think I took that trauma. So I've got a lot of background that people will learn through this podcast. I've dealt with a lot of issues from my family and my childhood. I remember two choices I made when I was young was one, I realized I would not be able to learn from my family what it was like to be normal. I had to look outside myself. So that meant I had to build community and I had to find friends and family, like literally family of friends, that would show me what it was like to be normal, like what it was like not to yell and scream and be physically abusive and do all these crazy things that was happening at my house. Some people can just work for the government and they come home and they drink their tea and then they make dinner and they like go to bed. Oh, that's a life I could lead. They seem to have a good time. Maybe I should look at that. So I took this and was like, whoa, I can just settle into this life or I can gather information and then go into someone else's life. And so I think that was that drive for community for me was to literally get away from that. And I guess, lucky me, it served me well. I didn't know what I was doing back then. But that really worked out.
Yeah. And it sounds to me like you already knew you were enough. So you didn't have enough problem, because someone who has enough problem won't go seeking those things because they don't yet feel they deserve it. And so they have to go out into the world and prove that they deserve it before they can allow themselves those things.
Yeah.
And I don't think you had that issue.
No, I had made a decision when I was really young to separate myself from my family. I would endure until I turned the age I was allowed to leave the house. People run away at 16, but that seems too young because it seems like life is struggle at that point. So let's just finish high school, do my thing, and then leave. So to me, it was like, if I can separate myself from them, then I can be enough. But right now, I just have to endure what's going on around me and learn from them in good ways and bad ways, because my family has also taught me so much, which I'm very grateful for. For you, what was that turning point for knowing that you were enough, that you were no longer the problem or the reason why your father passed away, and you were no longer responsible for holding up your family and other things?
I think I started really understanding that more in college, and I think I started letting myself off the hook. It's been a continual process, but as my love affair with medicine started to end, I realized that the only thing keeping me there was this belief that this is what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the evidence was like, maybe it isn't. Maybe this isn't fulfilling you. Maybe all those stories you've told yourself, while beautiful and important and created lots of good in my life, also didn't allow me to be my best self. Looking back, it's so obvious, but it wasn't then. I was embarrassed of being a doctor. You know how people go to medical school and the first thing they want to do is call a restaurant, make a reservation and say, Dr. So-and-so, right?
Yeah.
I didn't want to tell anyone what I did for a living. I would go to parties and I would shy away and shrink away so that I didn't have to tell people what I did for a living. That should have been a huge sign to me. I didn't have a lot of doctor friends. I didn't like hanging out in doctor places. Like, all of those things should have been real signs to me that this wasn't fitting, but I ignored them. And so there became a point where it became difficult to ignore, where I was living that life and I was going through the paces and I'm like, this just isn't serving me anymore.
Yep. That makes so much sense for someone to look at their life and then be like, whoa, here's the story I told myself. Here's what I got into because of that story. And then you're like, you don't even want to make a reservation at a restaurant with your new title that you worked so hard for.
I talk about a lot, especially in coaching and on the podcast, about those kind of childhood narratives that we tend to fulfill even if we're not meaning to. I definitely have a running childhood narrative. My father died when I was 7, and my mom spent my whole childhood telling me how perfect and wonderful and special he was, like about everything. Which really sounds good, right? That's what a little kid wants to hear. But instead, I got this message, that's what success looks like. And so you have to be like that. It's been very hard for me because the narrative is I'm supposed to be as good as my dad, but even my dad wasn't as good as my dad. What I got were the loving memories of someone who had passed away and the heroic stories that my mom told to me so that I would feel connected to this person who wasn't in my life. But then I took that on as this is what being good looks like. I've had to continuously fight that narrative in my life. I found that when I let go of it, I can be much more authentic and intentional and start doing things that just fill me up.
Yeah.
And so I think we all have these narratives that chase us from childhood. I call it generational trauma. We have good things too, and I call that generational growth, right? We have good things that we learn from our families that serve us in the future and that we pass on to the next generation. But we also have these kind of traumatic narratives. And so the idea for most of us, if we want to get to this place of enough and then pursuing authentically a life of purpose that isn't hurried or rushed or goal-oriented, but just fills us up, we've got to look back at some of those narratives and come to terms with them and realize that I wasn't a bad kid. My father dying wasn't my fault. And I can still be good on the inside and not live up to those stories my mom tells me about him because I'm already enough and it's already fine. And I've already done all I need to do. And if I die tomorrow, I've lived a practical, successful life. And so if I can free myself of that, and I think if we can all free ourselves of that kind of I'm not enough thing, we then can find that purpose is way more abundant and less scarce than we think.
How do you feel this change for yourself has affected other people? Because you're doing a different job. You raised your kids in a certain way with this mentality. and then you're changing, but they might not know to the extent of how much you've changed. It might not be communicated to them. It's just a shift. What does that look like?
I think when you start living a life that feels more purposeful and intentional and start doing things that light you up, you change the world in so many ways. So when I went from being a doctor who didn't feel like they were making a difference and not enjoying my life to being a content creator, an author, a writer, I started blogging and then podcasting. My blog went to hundreds of thousands of people. My podcast has gone to millions of people. And then I wrote a book. And every time I get an email of, oh, your book said something, it made me think and it made me change how I do things. And I'm a lot happier now. You realize that those ripples in the ocean caused by that little drop or pebble of purpose you drop into it carry. And they carry not just for miles, but for years and decades and even generations. So who knows what my kids will see in me, and that'll affect who they become. But what my goal is I want to model for them the behavior of someone who's living a life of purpose intentionally and doing things that lights them up. Because yeah. I want them to become adults who do things that lights them up. And I think if we can create that whole generational growth instead of generational trauma, instead of handing to the next generation all those bad and difficult stories and narratives that many of us mindlessly carry on and just push on to the next generation, what if we could show them growth? What if we could show them people doing things that are thoughtful and purposeful, that are just slowly and locally changing the world? Because I think if you want to have global impact, you have to have a local effect. And so you can go for global impact right away, but those are those kind of big, audacious goals. But if you go for a local effect, the likelihood is eventually you're going to have global impact anyway.
Yep. It's a ripple effect, just like you're saying. It's one by one. And that's the way I've always considered any change. It really is change yourself. Then you change your immediate circle, whatever that looks like. And people will come and go because of that change, and that's okay. And then those people go and change and et cetera, et cetera. And I think, like you said, it's a ripple effect that you can have in the world.
And when you pursue purpose, you naturally pull people towards you, not just family members, but communities of people who dig similar things.
Yeah.
And you become mentor to them, and they become mentor to you, and you become teacher and student, and you get this really nice reciprocal relationship that can change the world. And I think it not only brings inner happiness, because there are tons of studies that show that actually our relationships with other people are probably what truly brings us happiness more than our money, our jobs, and all those kind of things. The Harvard Men's Study is a big one that's been going on for decades and decades, which is connected pretty much our relationships with our sense of happiness.
Yep.
And the way often we get there is through purpose, doing things we dig. You dig cars, you write a blog about cars, or you go work on cars, you are likely to get other gearheads around you who love cars. And before you know it, you're swapping stories, you're doing projects together. And those kind of things build and create these communities of people, I think, who support each other and who make a much better life.
I want to talk a little bit about the generational healing. I think, so we call generational trauma. That's the things we bring with us that may have served us at some point when we've reacted to them. So we might become a perfectionist, and that gets you through residency and med school and all those really difficult parts. I'm also a perfectionist because I saw some stuff that I was like, oh, if I'm not perfect, then someone's going to respond terribly. So I need to make sure everything's okay. Turns out that's not a great way to live your life in your late 30s, mid-20s. Mistakes are really important. But one thing that my dad did do that was so incredible that I didn't realize until probably my late 20s was, my dad has a saying, he's never worked a day in his life. My dad's an artist. My dad went to university. He studied mathematics and philosophy. That's just like a nerdier type person. And then he saw the words art studio on a wall after working for IBM in Toronto. And he was like, that. It was just, he saw that and he knew that he could go make tons of money continuing to work for IBM in Toronto in his early 20s. And he quit everything to learn how to draw and paint. He literally hitchhiked down to Los Angeles, slept on beaches and studio floors, and for the next 15 years became a really great artist. So he taught others how to paint and draw. And my whole life. We didn't have money. There's a reason I'm in the financial space is because I really wanted to pursue that part of life. But watching him truly never work a day in his life gave me a shift in perspective of what work was. And that to me is a gift he could pass on to me, where I've never hated a job. There are parts of jobs I don't enjoy. There are jobs that I look back and I'm like, I wouldn't do that again. I've been a house cleaner. I have worked in bars. I've worked in a bakery, waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning to be there at five. I have been a bartender, a hostess, a waitress, a caregiver. And then I work as a project manager. There's only one job I've ever hated, which was data entry at a university where I just took one thing from a spreadsheet into another one. I just could not find any purpose in that because the only part of that I liked, I was in the financial aid office. So I got to help people with their scholarship applications. And that was the only part of that job I really enjoyed. I've never sat there and been grumbly about a job or needed to quit. I was literally cleaning toilets and I had no problem with it. And I would say that is my dad, that mentality that he just constantly never worked a day in his life, loves his job, loves his job. I learned that people love their job. So I love my job. Thanks, Dad. Appreciate it, because that's going to serve me well no matter how long I work or whatever work looks like for me. I feel really fortunate that was something for him that he found purpose and passion in his life, pursued it to the fullest. Incredible artist, has helped so many people become their own artist. I have been able to apply that in a whole other meaning to my life.
I think in a sense, that's generational growth. So you can look and see all sorts of generational trauma. For you, this piece was generational growth. The key is how, when you're thinking about your own kids and your own family and your own friends, how to do more generational growth and less generational trauma. It's an interesting thing. So what your dad really did is, your career can mean many things to you. And for some people, career and purpose have nothing to do with each other. And that's okay, right, as long as you're intentional about it. In your case, the generational growth your dad gave you is, he very much melded and combined career with purpose, and it very much worked with him. And you tried on that identity of his and found it works for you. And therefore, you now model that behavior, which will then again be an identity your child eventually will look and try on and see if it works for them. That's what generational growth actually looks like.
My kid might try it on, but it might not work for them. They might not like every job. That's going to be really hard for me. I've had that with partners. Like, why don't you like your job? I feel judgmental towards them.
But here's the difference between generational growth and generational trauma.
Yeah.
Generational growth, when the next generation tries it on, if they like it and connect to it, great. And if they don't, it's pretty easy to walk away from. Generational trauma is not. Mm-hmm. Generational trauma are these narratives that are so deeply ingrained into who we are because we've experienced them so often during childhood that it's really hard to walk away from them. In fact, people feel stress and anxiety when they try to walk away from them, even if those narratives are making them miserable.
Yep.
And so that's the big difference, is it's really hammered into your head. Trauma, for whatever reason, really gets hammered into your head. Whereas generational growth, if it's done appropriately, the next generation says, oh, yeah, that's not my thing, and goes and looks for something else and then finds something else that they love. So they're very different in that sense.
That gives me pause. That's a really important thing to remember for people. Jordan, if I'm someone who is lacking passion, purpose, meaning in my life, what are just some strategies I could use to find it?
So first and foremost, this gets a little complicated, but I really think happiness is meaning and purpose. And what I found is a good deal of the population actually has a much more bigger meaning problem than a purpose problem. Okay. So to break it down, meaning is about our past and it's about thoughts. And so meaning is all about our thoughts about the past. Happy people who tend to develop a great sense of purpose tend to tell themselves heroic stories about their past, even if they underwent trauma. So it's the classic story, and I think I'm an example of this. My father died when I'm seven. I don't see that as a tragedy. He even sent me into being a doctor, which I didn't love, but I see that as this wonderful heroic story of me overcoming and learning who I really wanted to be so I can be happy today. My sense of meaning about my past is this very positive, heroic thought process about what I went through. The story I tell myself about myself is a very positive, happy story.
Yeah.
That's happy people who then have no problems with purpose. The other side is people who tell themselves more of a victim story. They see their traumas. They have their narratives. They can't step outside of those narratives. They can't step outside of this fact that bad things happened to me, but that doesn't mean I'm a bad person.
Yeah.
They feel very much like victims. When they go to the present time, when their cognition, their thoughts, their sense of meaning from the past is a very negative, victim-oriented belief, when they go to the present and future and start trying to build purpose, the narratives they have are, it never worked out. Every time I tried, it got thrown back in my face and things don't work. So they have issues. So when you say, how does someone go about finding purpose? I actually say, first of all, we have to think a little bit about meaning and answer that question, am I enough? And the way you answer that question, am I enough, is you have to look at those narratives of childhood and maybe rewrite them in a sense to feel like you're a hero of the story instead of a victim. If you can get to that place and realize you're already enough, then starting to think about purpose is really easy because you don't feel negative and you don't feel like it's going to blow up in your face and you don't have all these holes of emptiness you're trying to fill because you already did that with meaning and looking at your past. Now you can just authentically look at what you like. So if you can get to that place where you're feeling a little bit better about your past, you've dealt with some of your emotional traumas, and you have meaning a little bit better understood, purpose is all about your present and future. And it's not about thoughts. It's about actions. It's about what we do in our present and future. Remember, meaning is about our past and thoughts. Present is about actions in our present and future. So if you have a reasonable sense of meaning, then people rarely struggle with finding purpose if they don't innately know, right? If it doesn't hit them over the head, like when your dad saw art studio and knew. So some of us are lucky enough to be hit over the head and have that moment where we know, those aha moments. But let's say you're not one of those people. If you're otherwise in a fairly healthy place, there's some really easy ways to go about thinking about what purpose looks like in your life. In my new book, The Purpose Code, I talk about five or six of them. The first one is one I actually talked about in my first book, Taking Stock, which is the life review. We do life reviews with dying patients, and they're all about, partially at least, about regrets. And so you ask yourself these series of structured questions about your childhood. What were your best moments? What were your worst moments? What were those key relationships in your life? What do you hope to accomplish now, et cetera? When you're dying, it's often too late to go back and address those issues. But when you're young and healthy, like a lot of us are, you do this life review and you start saying, oh, these are the big regrets of my life. Guess what? You know, the word regret in someone who's young and healthy and has lots of years is actually just purpose. It's an anchor for purpose. So we're not looking to find purpose because you don't find purpose, you build it. But we are looking for these anchors, these inklings of purpose to then start creating or building a life of purpose around. So life review is a great way to start thinking about regrets and use them as an anchor to build new purpose.
Right.
If that doesn't work for you, I often tell people to think back about childhood. Often kids, before they have purpose placed on them by society and family and marketing and social media, often they just do things they love. For me, it was baseball cards. I loved baseball cards as a kid. Eventually, I grew up and realized, oh, I can't do that for a living. I have to be a doctor, do all these other things. But that was a joy of my childhood. So if you can think about what were the joys of your childhood and why you stopped doing them, sometimes it's easy to find an anchor there. And then you can start building a life of purpose around it. If I felt like my life was really lacking right now, I could go back into baseball cards. I could start reading blogs about baseball cards. I could go to the baseball card shows. I love that life.
Yep.
That's purpose waiting for me to get involved with. I have other things going on, so I choose not to at the moment. But these anchors from our childhood are usually there. We just have to think about them.
When you're talking about this going back to your childhood, something that really triggers for me is talking to friends and family from that time period.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to do this journey of purpose alone because, like you said, it's building it. It's a journey. Sometimes other people can have insights that you just don't even remember. And you're too locked up in your own stories and ideas and maybe even like that goal of finding purpose, which is a goal then at that point, not a building of purpose. Asking them. When I told my mom that I was building a community of financial nerds, she was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, you used to do the ice cream thing. You've always had a community. And I was like, oh, you knew this. I had no idea. I've been searching for this for years. And so I think talking to those people is really important.
Ask your parents what happened when they finally boxed up your room after you left and became an adult. And what did they find? And your parents will be like, I found equestrian trophies and all these pictures of horses and all these horse magazines that were sitting around that you had left over from childhood. Right. Or I found all your basketball trophies and the basketball magazines and the drawings you used to do. And like, your parents actually may have a really good idea of what lit you up. You've just forgotten. You've moved on. You've become and evolved. But that doesn't mean that those things still might not be purpose anchors for you. And then right. I think there are a bunch of other ways. Work is a great one. A lot of us say, oh, we're unhappy at work, and then we discard work completely. But maybe there's an anchor and an inkling of purpose within work. I knew that. I was getting tired of being a doctor, but the one thing I would do, even if I wasn't being paid for it, was the small part of my job, which was hospice work.
Right.
But that became the anchor that I could then build the life of purpose around. So even now, I don't think of myself as a doctor anymore. I don't really practice most of medicine, but I'm still a hospice medical director and spend about 10, 15 hours a week doing that. There was that kernel of importance there that was good enough that I knew that while my whole job didn't feel purposeful anymore, that piece of it did. There's no reason to throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you're looking to walk away from work, at least spend some time thinking about, is there any part of work, even if it's a tiny part of work, that lights you up? And could that become a new anchor to something you do in the future? And then, of course, there's the spaghetti method, which you and I talked about, which is throw a bunch of spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks. So if you have no idea what your sense of purpose is, life review didn't do anything for you, your parents can't clue you in, and memories of childhood don't help, you hate everything about your current job, just start saying yes. Start doing things you don't normally do, going places you don't normally go, saying yes to people you don't normally say yes to, and experience a bunch of new things. And if something you experience feels good, do more of it. Pursue it further. Take the next step. Purpose is abundant. Yeah. And when we stop looking at it as goal-oriented and just say, what kind of things light me up that I could enjoy spending an afternoon doing? All of a sudden, purpose doesn't sound so scary anymore. It doesn't have to have an endpoint. It's just, what can I get myself involved in that lights me up? If you can start looking at it that way, purpose, again, becomes much less scary, much more abundant, much easier.
Yep. The elephant in the room in all of this really is the idea of change. I think purpose will equal change in your life. And there's always that thought, what happens next when I change? And like you said a few minutes ago, which is your life will get better. The life around you, the people's lives around you will get better because you'll become an inspiration. And change can be difficult and sometimes really is difficult. So you're going to have to walk through the mud to get to that next level of your life. And if right now is not hard enough for you to make that choice, to make a change, to go towards purpose, that's okay. Life will get hard enough and it will be glaring in your face, like at some point, that you don't have a choice, that you have to change. And then hopefully you don't get to that point because it's nicer to make the choice for yourself, but life will make you choose at some point to start moving towards a better direction. Or you'll end up on your deathbed and you'll have that life review and have regrets. And that's okay as well, because a life is a life and it is what it is.
I'm not nearly as optimistic as you are. I see people over and over again who life keeps on getting difficult and more difficult, and they keep doing the same things over and over again. They keep on getting the same results.
Yeah.
So I disagree with you on this one. I think if you're blissfully happy, don't change. But most of us are not blissfully happy. If you want new results, you're going to have to do something different. And when you do something different, you naturally are going to step out of your comfort zone and by definition, step into the uncomfortable. Yeah. And this is inevitable. But I don't agree with you that life will get uncomfortable enough where people change, because I see people both on their deathbeds as a hospice doctor, as well as when I do my purpose coaching, I see people so tightly holding on to those old narratives that it's just too fearful for them. And their lives literally get worse and worse. Their relationships get worse. Their work life gets worse. They make lots of money, but it doesn't make them happy. So I don't 100% agree with that, because I do believe that people do run themselves into the gutter. And so it's incumbent upon you, if life is not happy, if you're not where you think you should be, if you want different results, you're going to have to do different things. If you want to keep having all the same things, just keep doing what you're doing.
I appreciate that. It is true. I don't see people at the end of their life, but I do see people in it. And as a 35-year-old, I see that path. I see the people who are pursuing whatever passion or side hustles or doing the things that they're doing, but they're making choices in their life. And you can see that their life is progressively getting better. Things seem to be working out. And then I do see the people who it just keeps going and you hear the same stories from them over and over. And eventually they keep on replaying them.
Yes. They keep on replaying their childhood trauma and narratives over and over again. And they always get the same results.
Yep. And thanks for that wake up call that, you know what? Life might not get hard enough for you to actually make a change. So you need to make a change. Absolutely love that, Jordan. Where can we find you? And if someone is having a really difficult time with that change, how do they get help?
So the easiest place to find me is jordangrummet.com. That's jordangrummet.com. There you can see basically links to the three ways I produce content. One is a medical blog, which I don't write on anymore, but I wrote on really from about 2004 to 2018. The other is a financial blog called Diversify. And last but not least, there's the Earn and Invest podcast, which is probably what I spend most of my time doing. You can also see links to my first book, Taking Stock. My second book is not up there yet because we're not at that point, but it will be soon. And as part of the Earn and Invest podcast, if you go onto that page, I am doing purpose coaching. So that's one-on-one coaching for people who are having issues with enough, career, and just generally feel like they've got their finances in order, or at least they know what to do with their finances, but it doesn't seem to be serving them. Best way to get there is earnandinvest.com/coaching.
Absolutely love it. I've gotten coaches in my life and it's literally 8 sessions with my coach put me on an entire different path that I was not expecting, which has led me to the best life I have today. So I think coaching and just getting that exterior view, help and some guidance from someone who's done it or is doing it is so helpful. Thank you so much for joining us today and talking about purpose and helping people make a big difference in their life. Because if you take one change, everyone, like you don't know where it's going to lead and it could lead to something absolutely incredible.
Thank you so much for having me.
Some of you in the FIRE community are listening to this podcast and saying, oh my gosh, this is me. I have pursued huge goals. Financial independence is a large goal, but you forgot the purpose behind it and what to do after you've achieved that goal. My absolute favorite part of this podcast really was when Jordan talked about being a victim or a hero of your story. We can have the best life ever and see ourselves as a victim. We can have the worst life ever and see ourselves as a hero. I think that really makes a difference in our lives. Is can we overcome? Can we do something new? Is change something we can adapt to? If we're struggling, do we see a way out of it? And I think with all of those little soft skills, it makes you closer and closer to finding a purpose in life because you're willing to put yourself outside of your comfort zone and really just do something. I see this a lot in my own life. I grew up in more difficult circumstances, poverty, family issues. I had to grow up really quickly. Something about that gave me the confidence to step outside my comfort zone and pursue different skills, activities, different places in the world. And that to me has made me feel purposeful. I also, at a very young age, found part of what my life calling is, which is truly to create community. This has been like a driving force for pretty much my entire childhood and so far in my adulthood as well. I noticed that if I'm not creating community, there's something lacking in my life. And the second that I am finding like-minded people, creating my own community, I feel that sense of purpose again. So that's really nice. I feel like I kind of got lucky. The other thing that I connect with in this podcast is the question, am I enough? When you hear that, what comes to your mind? Do you think, heck yeah, I am enough? Or like, whoa, something's really off there. And you get a sense of dread. Because the question itself is something that's really difficult to answer for you. Or maybe you're struggling with something in your life and you realize, maybe you don't feel like you're enough. I challenge you to think about that question. Am I enough? And truly, the answer you should get to is you are. Because you know what? You are. If you're enjoying this podcast, one of the ways that you can support is to like, subscribe, share with friends, and please leave a review. That last one is the most important. It helps others to find the podcast and know that others actually like it. Social proof is really important. So go ahead, leave 5 stars. Tell them this is great.